Pick Six Pool. That's more money for the horse players to win. The best of racing. The best of nighttime quarter horse racing. Always at Los Alamitos. Remember, daytime thoroughbred racing returns on Friday, September 16th.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds Family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Friesian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full-service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, LeaderShield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
At the races with Steve Bick. Racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back to Park. Ben Stanley, just outside, just north on 95. And Scott Shapiro is standing by. Scott, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you today?
I'm great, and of course, we were together sitting at Churchill last week and had a lot of fun. That was a really pleasant kickoff to the season, so thanks again for last week.
Yeah, that was great. Always good to get to catch up in person, and you must be excited. Eagles looking very good early on, and a lot of favorable schedule, so good stuff for your birds.
No complaints. I'm in Philadelphia, and this is typically a lot of times this third weekend of the season. Parks' big day, the Eagles had been home literally five of the last 6 years, and not the case. So Tina and I can't go to the game. I did toy with
driving down.
I even floated it. Well, because I've got there's a guy in my baseball league, in my rotisserie league that we've played since 1987. There's a guy that's an executive with the Washington Football Club, and I could certainly go down to Landover, but then you're suddenly in D.C. at 5 o'clock on a Sunday, and you know Tina's got to teach, and the kids must learn. And, suddenly you got an 8-hour drive home. It's not going to work. So we will.
Right,
I think
right.
We're only going to get to one. I think we're only going to get to one Eagle game this year.
What game you got?
They're playing. I think it's the Panther game. I forget. I don't even remember. I was so excited about the season, and there were a bunch of road games even that coincided with places that I was going to be. And I thought, oh, good, we'll be able to see him on the road once or twice, and nothing worked. The Arizona Cardinals, I thought maybe, you know, they if the game was the Sunday of symposium week, that would be perfect. Didn't work. Whatever. I mean, there were like two other spots that I thought I could, you know, maybe I would be in proximity. And then, you know, then they're playing all these night games, which is just, you know, Thursday
it's
night,
a compliment,
Sunday night,
though.
Monday night.
Yeah, that's a compliment.
Nah, whatever. not when you have to put it on the DVR and wake up the next morning at 5 a.m. with your phone off so you don't know what happened.
Yeah.
And you go downstairs and watch, you know, watch the last second half, you know, from 10:30 till midnight.
Right.
You know?
Well, maybe you're saving up for the playoffs. You know, you'll be able to go to a playoff
game.
That's fine.
Now, all right. Your mouth to God's ears. That'll be fine. Scott, it's funny. The meet started off with these two big 2-year-old races, and we had minor upsets in both. The weekend at Churchill comes right back again, and another terrific card tomorrow, highlighted by the Dogwood and the three supporting stakes. Now, we do have some very short prices to contend with, but at least in the case, I would think, of the Seneca and to some degree the Dogwood, not everybody's going to go run to bet Echo Zulu at 4-5.
Correct. I would agree. I thought the Dogwood came up very fun and kind of a unique race. And I haven't seen these fillies take each other on, which, you know, makes it unique. You got Echo Zulu coming back, obviously the class of the field, but, you know, questions to answer. Hasn't been, you know, that Oaks effort, both Kentucky and Fairgrounds. So Fairgrounds was workmanlike. I thought she ran huge in the Kentucky Oaks, but the issues during the Acorn and, yeah, I mean, first start off the layoff. I'm not rushing. You know, I picked her for second. I mean, she's the likeliest winner, but a little bit difficult to trust. You got Wicked Halo taking on her stablemate. She's been just epically managed by Steve Asmussen as he just continues to find spots to build her confidence in. And while, you know, the Prioress was a grade two, other than the eight bells, I would think this is a tougher field than she's faced, not to take anything away from the Prioress where she ran well. But I have some interest. I picked Tarabi. It was kind of a workmanlike mm-hmm. effort in that first race out of the Wilton. But this is just a horse that can make her own trip. She's got tactical speed, doesn't need the lead. And you would suspect Echo Zulu to be on the lead, but then, you know, Chasing Fireflies is a pretty quick horse. I don't know if she has the speed of an Echo Zulu. But Tarabi should be sitting in the perfect spot. And it appears to me that right after that race, Sharita Bell thinking immediately about the Dogwood, giving her some time off. And I also think Gunning's interesting at a bigger price at 8-1. I mean, this is a very talented daughter of Gunrunner, Kenny McPeak, having a great start to this short September meet. And I just think she was up too close to the pace in the Audubon Oaks. She battled early. And I expect that with the rider change, Kenny taking Corey Lannery off and going to Brian Hernandez, that Brian's instructions and plan will be to come from a bit more further off the pace. After taking on winners for the first time at Ellis. So I thought it was more wide open than Echo Zulu. I'm going to go a few deep in the horizontals, and I ended up picking Tarabi.
4-1-5 then for you.
Yeah, 4-1-5-7. I had a hard time separating. I mean, Wicked Halo's got as good a chance as anyone. I
agree.
She's going to get a good trip too. She loves it here. It's kind of a race where I hate to include Echo Zulu when I'm going four deep in a 7-horse field. I just don't know if I have the guts to leave her off. But, obviously ticket construction I'll think a little bit more about tomorrow, but a fun race.
Yeah, and the one horse we didn't mention that feels to me a little bit worth noting because she just keeps improving with every start. That's Pletcher's Colorful Mischief, the Into Mischief
right.
that gets Gerardo Corrales. And I thought, you know, you go back to that Saratoga effort, and from a fig standpoint, I mean, she keeps advancing. One more forward move, and at 8-1, she's very attractive to me.
she should get a good trip, you know, with the speed to her inside. She did get a perfect trip at Saratoga in that race that you referenced, the first level allowance win by half a length. She kind of looked like she was running in place and backing up a little bit and then re-rallied, which, you know, it seems like a lot of Pletchers have that kind of running style. We see it a lot at Gulfstream, so I didn't know what to make of it too much, but she did get a good number, and like you said, she's improving, and the tactical speed, always an asset in a race like this, for any race, actually.
Yeah. No, she's mid. You know, she's drawn midfield, and she can set up behind the speed, and... you know, she's not missed the board. Two wins, two thirds in her four career starts. And as I mentioned, has yet to move, you know, yet to regress. But I don't disagree with you either about Tarabi's prospects at 4-1. It's an interesting group, especially if you're lining up to beat Echo Zulu. I don't think anybody necessarily is going to line up, though, to, you know, look too far beyond Gunite and Conaher in the Harrods Creek.
No, that looked like a two-horse race on paper where you could make the argument pretty easily that Conaher is going to be loose on the lead. And he didn't break all that well in the Jerkins, but from the inside and with his running style, there was really no choice but for Joe Rocco to send from the inside there. And he tired in the lane, understandably being pressed by Jack Christopher. The biggest question for me with Conaher is, can he be at his best and beat a horse like Goodnight without Lasix? You know, they made a you know, the big wins at Churchill here. The Churchill and Keeneland came with Lasix. I know they went to the, from everything I understood, they went to Iowa for the Iowa Derby in large part because of to be able to use Lasix against Stakes Company. And then last time, you know, took a little bit of a step backwards. I mean, it's been little steps backwards, kind of understandably, ever since that huge race on June 3rd here. But she does have the edge in terms of pace. But I just think Knight's going to have the tactical speed to sit right off her. He's proven over the racetrack, just like Conaher is, and he is proven without Lasix. And he's just become a really game. I mean, he's fast, but he's also gritty. I mean, that was a very impressive win in the Amsterdam to hang on there at 7-1, and he was coming at Jack Christopher. I mean, I'm not going to say he's going to beat him under any circumstances, but we know Jack Christopher would be 1-5 in this race. So I think Knight is hard to get past, even though Steve Asmussen still yet to win a race as of now at the meet. He has hit the board with more than half his runners, so it's just a matter of time, but just something to keep track of.
Interesting. All right, we sort of started to move backwards. Then give us some thoughts on the Seneca. That is the first leg of the Pick 5, race 7.
Yeah, this is an interesting race as well with Cocktail Moments, 2-1 morning line favorite. I really like the way Junior Alvarado rode this daughter of Uncle Mo last time over the slop at Saratoga. Prior to that, she had been kind of a horse that was dropped to the back and made one run, and a lot of that probably was after, you know, she's been a good horse, but after that, you know, eye-popping win on the Stars of Tomorrow 2 card when she came from well out of it, just kind of assumed that was her running style. But last time out, she was up closer to the pace in that race out of the Wilson Chute, and it was really advantageous. She ended up pulling away late, very promising effort. I think she's the deserving 2-1 favorite. But I'm going to ride the hot hand of Phil Bauer here with Scratch Cat.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Phil's doing all the right things these days, and she didn't get embarrassed, I didn't think, Steve, in the Alabama. She kind of found her normal spot towards the back, which is a little bit concerning in here. There's not potentially a ton of speed. It all kind of depends on what the inside two horses do racing in terms of Falconet, who definitely will be flashing early speed for Pletcher and Gaffleone. But Scratch Cat finished pretty well. I mean, Nest Hat crushed everyone that day, and even Secret Oath is obviously a step or two above these, but she did not embarrass herself. This horse could finish, and she's really gotten better over the last two starts since Phil taking the blinkers off. I think it's made a noticeable difference. That was a really good race, beating Colorful Mischief and Runaway Wife, I thought, here July 1st, kind of a breakthrough race for her. And she's just moving in the right direction, put forth a career-best effort on the Brisnet speed rating, on the Thoroughgraphs in the Alabama, and I don't see why she can't take another step forward. Clearly a horse that they've always liked, got hammered in her first two starts down in New Orleans, and really seems to be living up to expectations right now.
I completely agree. And you mentioned Falconet. I think Falconet is serious in here. You know, doesn't have sprint speed. I mean, she's got route speed. And so I don't think she necessarily, you know, has to have the lead by any stretch, but she may fall into it. And that might be, you know, fine, frankly, coming back, having not been seen since the Iowa Oaks, where she was a good beaten favorite, but she was still an okay second. I completely agree. I don't know if we're going to get 5-1 on Scratch Cat. And you know, I respect Cocktail Moments, but she doesn't have to doesn't have to win, as they say.
Turner Loose is a tricky read. You know, she's run some of her faster races, you know, in terms of the thoroughgraphs and whatnot on dirt, but a lot of that might have to just do with the class that she raced against as compared to the turf races. I'm a little bit dubious of her talent, kind of hopeful, you know, wagering on Scratch Cat that Ricardo gets aggressive from the inside, and maybe even Valentina Day, who looks a little bit up against it here from class and numbers, maybe gets aggressive, and that would really benefit a horse like Scratch Cat and, you know, even Cocktail Moments if there's a little bit of pace in here. So that's the one challenge with Scratch Cat. So if she gets hammered too much, I'll end up backing off. But anything close to the 5-1 is pretty attractive.
Let's talk about the Bourbon Trail. This is the 10th race. This starts the late double, and is the late double, of course, ties up this pick five that we're discussing, the Seneca, the Harrods Creek, and the Grade 3 Dogwood. The Bourbon Trail, not that the Pennsylvania Derby isn't the number one sophomore race of the weekend, but this three-year-old exclusive group going the Preakness distance of 9.5 furlongs, this is an interesting set of horses.
It really is. You've got a couple up-and-comers with St. Tappet and Warrior Johnny, who will likely take a bunch of support. Of course, St. Tappet, regally bred the day out of Havre de Grace for Pletcher and Mandy Pope. And then Warrior Johnny, I don't know what to make of that last effort. I mean, he ran really well in the maiden breaker, and then I know Phil Bauer talked about it, and you know, looks a little bit like he came back pretty quick on the 4th of July, but I mean, that was a different level effort at Saratoga last time. He took on all comers on the back stretch. He took all comers, you know, in the lane, and then he just absolutely pulled away. You know, you got to be concerned a little bit about regression, especially without the addition of Lasix this time for the first time. But if he runs back to that effort with his style, you know, he's going to be tough to beat. But there's a horse in here that I'm going to try to get into the number and ideally on top. And I've backed this horse a couple times recently. He hasn't been good enough to win, but he's still showing me the same late run that I like. And that's number 5 War Campaign. He's 15-1. He's another one that, like a lot of these, Steve, that won't get Lasix for the first time. But I've really just been a fan of this horse throughout the early part of his career. He's been lightly campaigned by Phil Sims. Since stretching out the two turns, he's done nothing wrong. He really has no early speed. He was handled pretty easily in the St. Louis Derby at FanDuel by Rattle and Roll. But he finished well that day, and I don't think the added ground will hurt him. In fact, I think it will help him. So I'm going to build my trifecta tickets and whatnot around War Campaign, respecting Homebrew, Warrior Johnny, St. Tappet, and Gilded Age, who really likes this racetrack and is another one that will be tough for War Campaign to outkick. He wasn't able to do that 3 back on the 4th of July, which was the last race of the spring meet here. But that was a little bit of a weird race where there was a runoff horse. So a little bit of different race dynamics than I think we'll see here, which will be an honest but a little bit more moderate pace than that. So War Campaign at a big price for me.
I like it. 15-1, the 5, Phil Sims sending out Corey Lannery on War Campaign in the Bourbon Trail. And that gets us to one of these auction races. These are horses that have sold for 50 or less. Or Arenade for 50 or less. By the way, another strong session. We got two, basically book 6. We got 2 more sessions today and tomorrow to wrap up Keeneland, and they have set an all-time record, tick under $400 million, the biggest sale in Keeneland history. It's just mind-boggling, to be honest. And people will be there until that last horse goes through the ring tomorrow early evening. This group is kind of intriguing, and there's a little bit of pedigree to be noted. Dale Romans has got a horse that kind of caught my eye at 8-1 with Talamo. Do It, the Cairo Prince out of Doolittle, the Polish numbers mare that got Tricks to Do, people might
Tricks
remember.
Tricks to Do,
was
right.
A nice yeah. sprinter. Remember Tricks to Do? Yeah, this is
yep.
a half, and was a $45,000 purchase, so slips right in into the sweet spot. For these $50,000 types, there are some horses that have made starts. This is a tough way, frankly, to end the sequence.
It is, and I'm going to end up leaning on horses that haven't raced yet. Only a couple have raced, actually, only two. Frost Delicious, who's on the inside for Ingrid Mason, and Through the Cracks, who will make her first start in Kentucky after a couple of tries in Louisiana. This now in about Carlderville was. Or Chasey DeVille before that. But I landed on Pioneer Parade as a top pick. Never loved the far outside draw in these for first-time starters, as the horses tend to break out towards space a lot of times. But Jimmy DeVito, really good with firsters, especially two-year-olds, at the main special weight level, 97 start sample size, 21%, 236 ROI. And this one is a little – the pedigree is kind of interesting. I mean – Carpe Diem has sold for $45,000 at the OBS sale back in April. The Damside pedigree Langers, this mare has produced some good horses, but they're more turfy and synthetic. Strike Me Down earned them over $400,000. That's half to this one, as well as Golden. Can't read my writing here. Golden Saber, yeah, Golden Saber, who also earned well into six figures. So Tyler Gaffleon jumping aboard. I like Pioneer Parade. I think Birdie Rose is a horse you have to use. Just squeaks in under the conditions, selling for $50,000 for Brad. He legs up Ricardo, 5-2. Pretty solid female family, giving the sales price. And then the one sneaky horse that I like is number 7, Ring Twice. You know, this one sold for just $5,000 back last October, and a little bit of sneaky pedigree. It's cowbred here, running. In this spot, which is interesting for Donnie Von Hemmel, and it's half the ringleader who won her first three starts for McLean Robertson. So there's some precocity there, and you would suspect a cowbred that didn't sell for much, somewhat overall modest pedigree, might get overlooked. And if the morning line that Mike Battaglia created is any barometer, it's 15-1. That is pretty juicy. So I'm going to go 3 deep to close it out.
Interesting. I like it. Good job. Good job. It's a tough spot. The nice thing though is there are obviously, particularly with the Harrods Creek, there is a place where you can be a little narrow, and some people might latch on to, if you believe Echo Zulu, and I think that's a more treacherous group than. You might make out at first glance, but a very good pick five that starts in race 7. And this, of course, is, by the way, a Saturday night card. So you don't have to worry
yes,
about
sir.
This taking away your attention. Yeah, don't let this – it's not going to take attention away from what's happening here at Parks. Scott Shapiro with us. Scott, what else you got? You got anything for today or any NFL, any Parks action?
Well, first off, I just wanted to remind everybody the Twin Spires bet back promotion here at Churchill is back to paying second and third over the last couple of weeks here. Today's eligible races are 7, 8, and 10, and then tomorrow the 6th, which is a maiden event, the 11th, which we just talked about, and then the 10th, which is, of course, as I forget the order of the races here, the Bourbon Trail that we just talked about. So remember to opt into those. And I handicap the two big races at Parks. And on the Pennsylvania Derby, I'm leading on Cyberknife, who I just think has mentally figured it out and should get a perfect stalking trip. Has shown versatility, is really the mental part of the game, which has been such an issue. Seems to be, back to a high level here. And the fact that Brad really wasn't planning on running in this spot, and then the horse was just doing so good, and this is the logical spot, I think all that's a positive. And then in the Cotillion, a little bit more of a shot. What do you think of Shahama? I like Shahama. Sorry if you already gave your thoughts.
So do I.
I like you like Shahama also?
I do. And you know, I thought the race goes through Pletcher, period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought
the three Pletchers are all serious.
Right, yeah, Goddess of Fire, of course. And, I think Secret Oath can obviously win, but it'll take a lot of money. That green up, I mean, that was a real big step forward last time. And never taken a step back.
Yep.
Get IRAD. So, I could totally see leaning on the Pletchers in there. So I'm going to lean on those two horses, and it looks like a really, really good, fun day as usual out there for you.
Excellent. Shap, best of luck this weekend, and we'll be watching Saturday night as the Downs. What's the theme for Downs After Dark tomorrow?
Fiesta, so Latino theme. So it could be fun. Yeah. I don't know if I'll get the pinata out, but hopefully it'll be, you know, it should be fun. It's the last one of the year for anybody that isn't aware. It's a 5 p.m. start time. The races that we talked about, you know, the race six, which starts the Derby City Six, which is starting to creep up there. That's at 8:30 p.m. So plenty of time if you're playing Parks or New York, play those, grab some takeout dinner, and play some Churchill Downs.
Nice. Scott Shapiro, everybody. Scott Shap, 34, on your Twitter and right there on your television. Joe and Scott bringing you all the action at the Downs. Coming up toward the bottom of the hour, we're right on time, actually. And Dale Day is going to swing in here. And we talked yesterday to Dale about tonight's card at Remington. But the card that they drew for Sunday, it is Oklahoma Derby Day Sunday at Remington. And boy, they got themselves a very, very nice sequence. So we want to check in with Dale. We haven't had a whole lot of time yet to look at much more than the Oaks and the Derby and the Remington Green. Nice opportunity starting with the Oaks, actually, Sunday. And it's an early evening-ish card. They have like a twilight. I didn't print the first race, but let's see. I mean, the stakes sequence starts with the Kip DeVille at 5 Central. So it's an evening-ish card. The Remington Oaks, the pick four, will start at 8:08 Eastern time, 7:08 Central. So you go from the Oaks to the Vance, the David Vance, and then to the Oklahoma Derby, and it closes out with the Remington Green. And a very nice all-stakes pick four. And there's more on the menu, but we haven't dug in beyond, you know, this section that I put up yesterday. Of course, the Kip DeVille, a 6-furlong sprint, starts the stakes action. The Flashy Lady corresponds for the girls. The Gaylord, 6.5, and then that leads into the late action. So we'll get Dale and see what his thoughts are for Sunday. And they should really, I mean, by all rights, this should be everybody's focus, you would think, as the Sunday winds down. I think Tina and I are going to be, I think we're going to actually maybe swing through Springfield, Mass. Sunday on the way home.
Massachusetts, great state.
Well, we're going to
spend some vacation time there with my father. He was a truck driver, and he used to go all through from the New England states to Florida for Owens Corning Fiberglass.
Oh, wow.
And so one year he took us to a trip through the New England states, and then we wound up in Montreal, Canada.
Wow, 10 years I spent. 10 years I spent in Montreal. Yeah. So the Big E, I think on Sunday, because Tina and I were looking at our schedule, and I think the last shot we've got the only shot we're going to have to stop at the Big E will be on Sunday on the way home, which is basically New England's, instead of New England having 6 state fairs.
Yeah, they have one.
They have one giant fair.
The conglomerate of all this. New Hampshire, what a beautiful state.
They're all fabulous. There's no weak sisters in New England.
We wound up going to Lake Laconia, and you thought you were at the ocean on the beach.
Laconia is New Hampshire, absolutely. Look at you.
came back and we stopped at our Sable Chasm.
Nice.
And I never forget walking across those little ridges.
Those ridges. That's great.
What's my dad doing to me? I have a fear of height. Never got over it.
I love it. I love it. Dale Day returns to talk. Of course, tonight, the action with the Oklahoma Bred Stakes, but the open company, the grade threes, the Oaks and the Oklahoma Derby, set for Sunday. And what a nice card they put together, obviously. Dale, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back. Yeah, we drew yesterday morning. Overnight finally came out sometime just around noon, maybe 12:30, I guess, our time. 12 races. We've added another pick four to the middle of the card, so we have three of those on the card. And then we added a pick five at the end, which will be an all-stakes pick five that will start in race eight. So plenty of opportunities for everybody to enjoy the races and play the races and hopefully make some money and go away very happy to wrap up their Sunday.
Well, you mentioned the pick five. I was focused on the pick four that starts with the Remington Oaks. And the pick five, though, the Ricks Memorial, the mile and a 16th on the grass. This one for fillies and mares. And then the Oaks, then the Vance, the Oklahoma Derby, and the Remington Green. Let's talk about the three-year-olds for a minute. And there's some fresh faces involved here, Dale, that some people, I mean, you know, there's a few that have been along the way this spring and summer that people will recognize, you know, horse like Best Actor for Brad Cox. Our friend Bo Lane bred this flatter colt, coming out of the Smarty Jones win right here at Philly, but bypassing the Pennsylvania Derby, and Brad told us that. I talked to him, you know, that week after the Smarty Jones win, and he absolutely said they were headed to the Oklahoma Derby. He thought a little more of a path of less resistance, but Rattle and Roll, of course, coming out of the Fairmont, or I should say FanDuel St. Louis Derby.
Yeah, it's hard to get corrected on that, isn't it?
Right? Yeah, it's going to take a while. King Ottoman from Steve Asmussen. In fact, somebody on Twitter was saying, "Watch out for Asmussen. He showed up at Lone Star and won that Texas Derby at 11-1." But give us some early thoughts here at the first glance of the Oklahoma Derby.
Yeah, it's we were expecting another Cox horse to come in. I just lost this name now to Tom Hayes. I'm not looking at the list right now. Anyway, they opted for a race at Churchill Downs, I believe, this weekend. So Best Actor comes in. Brad Cox trying to win his fourth consecutive Oklahoma Derby. And you know what? Good for them for taking the so-called lesser path. He's already won a Grade 3 race. We're a Grade 3 race for the Oklahoma Derby. You've only had four starts, all as a three-year-old. Yeah, that's nice to realize, okay, we've got something here possibly, but let's not throw him to the million-dollar wolves yet for the Penn Derby. And let's give him another chance to, you know, maybe continue to improve. And, you know, there's plenty of time to face the heavy heads of the nation down the road still. So even as a three-year-old, there's still opportunities for that. So, you know, it's nice to have Best Actor, morning night favorite, 9-5. You mentioned Rattle and Roll winning the St. Louis Derby. That one's very interesting to me. Brian Hernandez coming in to ride for Ken McPeak. Talk about a well-traveled horse. He's had stakes races all over the place. Wins the Grade 1 Breeders' Futurity last year at Keeneland. And then takes time off before going to the Fountain of Youth, Louisiana Derby, running fourth well back of Epicenter, Bluegrass. You know, change of pace a little bit now to the Matt Wynn. And then wins the American Derby there at Churchill on 4th of July weekend or week, before going to Indiana and then to St. Louis. So kind of all over the place, obviously talented, but maybe just not to the tier one talent, but good enough. And has, you know, it's knocking on the door of $1 million. Rattle and Roll, should he win the Oklahoma Derby, is going to be just a few thousand dollars shy of $1 million. So obviously another talented runner there. And then King Out, you mentioned him for Steve Asmussen. I text Steve a few times a year when I have a pertinent question for him, because I know he's busy. I try to leave him alone. And we've known each other for a long time. He really started out here as far as having his first success before he took off nationally. And I said, who do you have for the Oklahoma Derby? And he came right back with King Ottoman with no hesitation whatsoever. So I'm like, okay. So I look him up. I'm like, wow, you broke his maiden in a stakes race. That's not totally uncommon, but it's not the normal path. But he put one in at Lone Star in his home state down there, just close to where he lives in Arlington, when he is actually home, and wins the Texas Derby. Hasn't had that success repeat, but has been working very well, especially that last work a bullet at Churchill Downs, and anybody that follows Steve's training regimen, he doesn't normally put bullets or allow bullets to get into his horses. He trains them well, they get plenty of works, and so on and so forth, but his theory is not to train them, not to train them fast in the morning to where they don't have anything left for the afternoon or evening, but to, you know, build the endurance up. And so I saw that. That makes that interesting as well. And he, like I said, he didn't hesitate. So he obviously thinks something of this colt by Curlin. He wouldn't have put him in a stakes race as a maiden and continuing on that path of stakes races since.
Well, and the point could be made regarding King Ottoman, who could have run out of his own stall. You mentioned that three-year-old race that Brad Cox opted for. The horse in question, I think, was Homebrew, and Homebrew stays home for Cox and is actually the 5-2 favorite in the Bourbon Trail. Asmussen could have participated with King Ottoman out of his own stall, but opts to ship him here. And so there's some little maybe some smoke signals involved. In fact, before we talk about the Oaks and any other spot, Dale, run down that morning line that you referenced, because I've got blank PPs in terms of a line.
Yeah, morning line favorite is Best Actor at 9-5. Then coming for the second choice is Rattle and Roll at 5-2, and then it jumps up a little bit. King Ottoman, Asmussen at 5-1, and probably some of that is Steve Asmussen. Horses do very well normally at Ravage Park. He's been an 18-time leading trainer here, like most tracks where he competes on a regular basis. He's the all-time leading trainer by wins here. Just, you know, he's the all-time leader, period, everywhere. So it just goes to make sense that he's going to be the leader at most tracks where he's stationed. And when he starts a horse, almost regardless of what it looks like on the past performances, he gets played down, especially at Ravage Park. It's very rare. We've seen it happen once already, I think, maybe twice tops, this season in our short season so far, where he's had a horse win at higher odds. I mean, paying double-digit payoffs or even a closer to 10-1. But it's rare. It's almost automatic. If Asmussen has a horse on the track, it's going to be first, second, or third choice in the betting. Fourth choice in the morning line is the number one, Steel Sunshine, who's an interesting one, coming in primarily from Florida. Won the Ellis Park Derby in mid-August, but until then had never operated outside of Florida. And now he's going to make it two races in a row outside the Sunshine State. So he's stealing Sunshine and bringing it to Oklahoma, which, by the way, Sunday our weather is supposed to be pretty much perfect. Mid to high 80s is what I'm seeing by most of the weather forecasters. So we will definitely take that as we have just entered fall.
So Steel Sunshine, it went 8-1 maybe?
6-1, I'm sorry, 6-1.
6-1, okay, all right. And then we careen up from there.
Yeah, we go up from there. The Robertino Deodoro horses that he's had facing each other up in Canada, the Manitoba Derby, Canadian Derby, Great Escape, number 8, will come in at 8-1. He won the Canadian Derby by 3 lengths there in that mile and a quarter race. And then his other one coming in from Canada is Red Knobs, who won the Manitoba Derby in Winnipeg at Assiniboia, and then finished second to Great Escape in the Canadian Derby out there in Edmonton. That Red Knobs is 12-1, Flash of Genius out of the Sean Davis Barn, a local runner at 15-1, and one more in here somewhere. I got to figure. Big Chopper. Big Chopper also locally from Ramage Park. Jake Gellner trains Lane Leslie to be up second in allowance recently, will be at 15-1. So probably expect a couple of those there to be much higher, but that's just how it works out of the line.
No, that's fine. That's appreciated. Steel Sunshine, Kerry Brogdon, and of course the family is kind of a house horse, Macmur Hall, the Brogdons, and kept this one, whether this one wasn't ready to sell or whatever transpired. But Bobby DeBona, who is very capable, well known to New England players and fans, got this one on a nice roll, actually, between the Ellis Park Derby and the carryback, Louis Reyes aboard. Talk about the Oaks quickly, and the other Grade 3, of course, got an interesting field that came together here. Brad Cox sending Juju's Map, who has been a beaten favorite at short odds in her last pair.
Yes, finishing third, the Monmouth Park Oaks, Grade 3 there, beaten 3 1/4 lengths at 4-5, and then earlier in the Mother Goose back in June at Belmont, finishing third, well beaten third by more than 7 lengths in that one. So not obviously on top of her game, but trying to bring her back and get her back to where she was last year's 2-year-old, winning the Alcibiades at Keeneland, a Grade 1, and then going on to the Breeders' Cup Juvenile in Del Mar and finishing second, beating 5 1/4 lengths, but beaten by Echo Zulu, who was at the top of her game, obviously, last year at that same time. So Juju's map, no slouch based on what she did last year, and Brad Cox and team trying to get her back up to where she was. She, you know, had to take time off for whatever the reason was and didn't come back until Oaks Day at Churchill on May 6th, winning an allowance there. But since then, Grady Company has had to settle for a couple of third-place finishes. But she brings her Grade 1 credentials in for our Grade 3 Remington Park Oaks and is a super heavy morning line favorite at 1-2.
That makes sense. Let's jump to the anchor leg, the Remington Green, the mile and an eighth turf event, and this seems very competitive. Good old Rated R Superstar shows up in here for a turf race. It's kind of interesting. He's been so much fun to follow, and he tried. It's interesting that his one turf try did come actually early in his career at Remington, but Sunlit Song, probably the place to start. The last scene at Sam Houston for Mindy Willis and Brian Hernandez Jr. aboard. Second in this last year, that from way back, in fact, which is not necessarily his preferred positioning, but, you know, for a variety of reasons, you know, just kind of found himself at the back of the 11-horse field and rallied to within, you know, 3/4 of a length of a win against Spooky Channel. So Sunlit Song, probably, you know, one of the principals in here. Some other familiar names like Dev Amani shows up in this spot, caught my eye. You know, some Brad Cox brings Price Talk in here off the win at Mountaineer that was off the turf, but, you know, very certainly capable you know, from a turf standpoint. Hidden Enemy, Steve Asmussen for Lee Levinson, L&N Racing as well. This is a good way to end the day.
Yeah, and this was the race that filled, I mean, basically as soon as they opened entries yesterday, there were 12 horses in it. It just was automatic. And, you know, if we had a wider turf course and the Churchill Downs Kentucky Derby starting gate, we probably could have filled it with 20 if we asked for it. So it's always an interesting race. It wraps up the card. And if you are live and you're all stakes pick 5 and all stakes pick 4 at this point, you get to sweat it out a little bit because there are options. And it makes it interesting because the horses you've mentioned coming in, Hidden Enemy, last race at Saratoga Fishing, third allowance company, and then Price Stock, the Cox Barn, early August at Mountaineer on the undercard of the West Virginia Derby Day, winning the West Virginia Speakers Cup there by an easy 5 1/4 lengths on their turf, off the turf on a sloppy track, switch from the turf, but still handling the switch well. Those two make it interesting because you're facing a lot of horses that have been here and doing well over the turf course, and one of those coming back who's had success here, Sunlit Song, won the Remington Green during the COVID year in 2020 when all the purses were dropped and so on and so forth, but pressed the pace then in September of 2020 and got up to win it by a neck. And then, like you said, last year, whatever happened, didn't get the cleanest start possibly, got shuffled coming down the chute, but is well back, but still rallies and gets there. And most of the action on the turf course at Remington is usually horses coming from off the pace. It's rare for one to get out front and be able to stay up front because the turf course runs a little bit faster than the dirt, and the competition is always kind of fierce. So the scramble coming off the backstretch into the turn always makes things interesting. So you have to get the trip as well. So Sunlit Song, always an interesting competitor, always good at Remington Park. Rated R Superstar is kind of an outlier. We'll see what happens. He ran his best race in quite some time in the Governor's Cup. He's been facing Graded Stakes Company prior to that. Won the Grade 3 Essex at Oaklawn, but then after that, didn't match up and follow that up very well. But he bounced back to the track where he's had good success for Danny Caldwell. From the outside, again, it shouldn't matter. It's a long run, about a little more than the furlong and a half, to the main oval for Rated R Superstar. So he should be able to get whatever position he wants to try to give him his best chance, David Cabrera, the four-time defending jockey up. But you got Paluxy, who's won twice here this season at Remington Park, switching to the turf now after winning over the main track. Carl Broberg throws U.S. Navy Cross in there. I mean, there's all sorts of options with the local horses. Perfect Star, who was fourth, a tiring fourth in the Turf Classic at Lone Star in mid-July that no one got to see, but was in position and just didn't hold on very well for trainer Jade Gellner. So there's plenty of opportunity in here to catch a price if a couple of those outsiders, like it is going to be Price Talk, for whatever reason, don't fire. Another one coming in last race at Del Mar, Shadrach, the number one horse, now trained by Sean Davis, known by George Sharp.
The Dale Day, everybody, and the Oklahoma Derby card, Sunday, late afternoon into the evening, and just a strong sequence of stakes action, multiple opportunities, three pick fours, early, middle, late, the all-stakes pick five that features the two grade threes, as well as the Vance, the Tough Remington Green, the wine festival is mentioned, and it should be a fabulous day in OKC. And Dale, looking forward to tonight with the three Oklahoma bred stakes and what should be really a terrific highlight weekend at Remington Park.
Yeah, this is always a weekend we point to. It comes up pretty quick in our season, but it's always very enjoyable. And years ago, we moved this big day to Sunday to avoid national competition situations. We put on the last day of September, and it also avoids college football, which is humongous around here, especially in Oklahoma. So it helps us out. It's one of those days where locally it catches a lot of fans that only come out once or twice a year. They may come out for Kentucky Derby, they may come out for this day, and we're happy to have them and, again, show a little extra hospitality with the different promotions for them, as well as some solid racing. So, again, everybody locally, come on out. If you're not too far away and you can handle a short drive to Oklahoma City or even a flight if you want to do that, hey, we'll take you. Come on in.
I love it. Dale, thanks so much. We'll look forward to some recapping and then start to turn our attention to the second half of the season as well that gets two-year-olds in focus in the Springboard Mile down the stretch later. But the first order of business tonight and Sunday, Oklahoma Derby Day and more. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me again. Weather's blessing us, so we will take it, and everybody enjoy a great winning weekend.
Dale Day, folks, the Dale Day on your Twitter. We'll stay here, and we got to get James Scully in before the top of the hour, because James has got an 11 o'clock. So we'll get James's plays while we wait for James. Grab that mic for a second there, Law. Tis the Law is here. Tom's the Law. How about Tom's the Law?
Yeah. It's Tom's Day Law. Tom's Day Ta. Tom's Tis the Law. How you doing?
I'm good.
Welcome to Parks, man.
Thank you.
Great to be here, huh?
Absolutely. The first time we've broadcast from here. It's awesome. A terrific spot, basically between the front of the building and the track apron, right? Yeah. Straight through. Tony Black is with us as well, the legend.
Legend. I've been here all week. It's been great. I cut... Parks hires us to kind of come in, and I get Tim Wilkin and Anthony Afrani with me. Got Nolan Clancy coming on Saturday, kind of help us run the media center.
Yeah.
Kind of do the barn notes and some features throughout the week, post-draw. We did the nomination stuff back at the end of Saratoga. It's kind of a little to be on slightly on the other side of the fence from being a reporter to kind of being more of a publicist. But
yeah.
It's a lot of fun. The guys from Parks are great.
No, they put on a big show, and that includes the TV coverage. We'll have Girardi, right, and who else is that whole?
Danny Gibson, and yeah.
Very nice.
Wonderful job.
We're going to talk more about it after the top of the hour, but right now let's get Scully in here and get James's ideas and opinions for the weekend. James, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Not at all. Let's dive in. I don't know if you want to venture into, I know you've got opinions about the Cotillion and the Pennsylvania Derby, but wherever you want to go.
Yeah, I'll just start with those races at Parks. I'll give a thought on that Gallant Bob. I thought, which is the race 10, which race before the Cotillion. I liked that the, I got basically the 3 and the 9. running son of a gun as A's in there. And no doubt about Provocateur is going to take action for Todd Fletcher and Irad Ortiz. But I am intrigued by running son of a gun, and I'm going to be keeping an eye out on his price. And he's listed at 6-1 on the morning line. And this is a colt that one thing I do like, the gelding, the one thing I do like about him is he's got a race over the track here at Parks. Shipped in for an entry-level allowance after running sixth in the Gotham and romped over the track. And then just a steady progression coming off a third in the Amsterdam, third in the Jerkins. He looks like he could have a chance for a little bit of value in a full field. So I'm going to tap in for the win in there, number nine running son of a gun in the Gallant Bob.
That's the second time that Toscano Charges has been acknowledged. It's a tough group. I had 14 horses, and I thought 7 could win, when I made the first pass. And certainly running son of a gun, one of them. All right, into the grade ones.
Yeah, I mean, the Cotillion, I mean, that's a tough – I thought that was a tough race. I spent a lot, spent a little time working on that. I do think that Society, if she breaks, she didn't break in the coaching club, but that's the only race. If she breaks, she's going right to the front. She'll have some horses right behind them. One thing, perhaps I'm reading too much into Chad Brown's intentions, but, Gerrymander is a filly steed that didn't get back until this spring. She didn't really make it back in time to aim for the Kentucky Oaks or the Black Eyed Susan and wasn't ready for the Acorn as well. But her first start at 7 furlongs, he ran her second time in that Mother Goose. And that was only a four-horse field, but you had Shahama, Juju's Map. It was a pretty decent group in there. And I just really thought Gerrymander was outstanding that day. I thought that she really showed a strong turn of foot on the far turn in a race that sort of looked up for grabs at that point and won really comfortably by a three-length margin. The race came back fast. She got a 104 versus net speed rating. The thing about Gerrymander is she hadn't been two turns yet. And I think at that point in time in June, Chad Brown had some options. There were two turn stakes, at Monmouth up ahead or at Charlestown. You had even the Catherine Sophia, which would have given her a chance to try a two-turn trip. But instead he opted for a race to Alabama, which in my mind – they knew that she had no chance of winning. I mean, Nest is in a tier alone. I think she's the horse to beat in the Breeders' Cup Distaff. She would kill these. She would win. She would beat these fillies in the Cotillion. And he was just looking to get her a hard race, Gerrymander, a hard race at two turns to set her up for this Cotillion. He looked ahead at this race, $1 million race, going a mile and a 16th. He needed to get Gerrymander a two turn start. He was willingly gave up the Alabama where she didn't have a chance at 10 furlongs to now cut her back to a mile and a 16th. I think she's going to get a good trip just right behind the speed with Joel Rosario. The reason why he wasn't in her on the Alabama was because he had gotten hurt. That was the same day Santana rode Echo again in place in a maiden race, and Pratt picked up the mount on Gerrymander. But you get Rosario getting back aboard Gerrymander, and she probably won't be 8-1 on the morning line, but she's going to offer some value on the tote board, Steve.
Yeah, I'm struggling to decide what to do with Gerrymander. There's a few referendum horses in here. I mentioned it earlier that Adair Manor, Gerrymander, and Secret Oath, all three, you could look at and I mean, there's probably people that's their top three. In fact, so it's a bit of a funny group to me. I'm convinced that
my thing with Secret Oath,
the race goes through
is
Pleasure
that
to me.
Yeah, and I agree. I mean, definitely Green Up is a contender. I like Shahama. I think she's back on course. She clearly, back in February, when she won that UAE Oaks before she got transferred to the U.S., that people were saying she could win the UAE Derby. That was an awesome performance. She came here. She needed a couple races. She looks to be back on track. And you got to respect Baffert chipping in. The thing with Secret Oak to me is that, I just thought, after that last race, she was drifting in the stretch, and I know it's 10 furlongs and a mile and 16 better distance per se, but you know, I thought when they said they were going to give her some time off and freshen her, you know, I thought that would be the case. I was surprised to see her running back here. I know it's a $1 million race, but I'm going to try to beat her at short odds. I just don't think she's as sharp right now as she was in the spring, and I'll let her prove me wrong as the favorite.
I'm of the same mind. Brought up the same point of reference as well. How about in the Pennsylvania Derby?
In the Pennsylvania Derby, that's a race where We the People is going to be like winging it early. But I do think it's similar to the Cotillion. You're going to have horses sitting right behind him, looking to pounce going into a far turn. Obviously, Taba. You got Cyber Knights drawn inside. You know, drawn inside those horses in post five. And I think Wide Barrio, off that last effort, I just think he's going to be forward, showing more tactic, being hustled more from his outside post. I have heard, like, people make the point of with Zandon that they're looking forward to betting him when he cuts back a distance. But I think a mile and an eighth hits him right between the eyes. I think his best races have come at a mile and an eighth. I thought he ran a terrific race in the Jim Dandy. To me, Zandon was so lightly raced going in the Kentucky Derby, Steve. And while it didn't work out that day at a mile and a quarter, he still ran a respectable third. And then he immediately got 3 months off. And, you know, coming back, you know, I know he had like 9 or 10 works in the interim, but he was still short on racing experience to me. He ran a huge race off the bench in the Jim Dandy, I thought. And while he, you know, he obviously came up a little bit short in the final furlong of the Travers, I do think 10 furlongs is a little too far for him. I think he gets that ground-saving trip from the inside with these horses mixing it up on the far turn in front of him, and he's going to be able to slingshot, you know, from... And I don't think he'll be too far back either. I mean, he could be sitting 7th, 8th, even 9th, but I never think he'll be further back than 5th or 6th, 5 or 6th win. I think he's looking, even if he's at the back of the pack, he's looking for a bluegrass-type trip where he's always in range of the front runners, and he's going to make his move on the far turn, and I'm going to give him the edge in the Pennsylvania Derby.
Interesting. All right. So, Zandon for you.
Yeah. And so I got the Chad Brown, Joel Rosario Daily Double there in the $1 million grid one.
Yeah,
race.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Where else are we looking?
Yeah, we're going to go right to Churchill Downs. Going to mention before I give a couple stakes thoughts in race number 6. There are a couple main races. Just wanted to give a quick call out to race number 6 is interesting. Because you have number 5, Mislead, Always Dreaming, 12-1 on the morning line. It's a half brother to 2-time Breeders' Cup sprint winner, Misdirection. Always Dreamer already has a big long shot winner at Churchill this summer in Madukas. And that's one I'll be looking to see if he's taken any action on the tote board. Number 12 as well, Carcano. He's a half brother to a couple stakes winners who run well, Churchill. But I went with number 10, Zed. I like the fact that this colt, this gelding, I mean, took money in his debut. And while he didn't show anything on the turf, he's come back and has a solid work since then. And you know, he Zed, his dam was won a juvenile stakes race by 13.25 lengths. So he's bred to be precocious on both sides of his pedigree. Shane's girlfriend was a juvenile stakes winner, and I'm going to look for Zed to run a big race through Doug O'Neill, switching to the dirt with blinkers on in race number 6.
Just a quick note, O'Neill has an AE, the 1A, that is an ownership situation with the Rusty Arnold horse, and that's Devil's Red that probably is not going to get in, I wouldn't think. But that happens to be a half to Roy H. So just make a note on your program, Devil's Red.
Yeah. Good. And you've got right. I love those pedigree races like that. Looking at the stakes in the Seneca, I really did think it was just a two-horse race. I don't think you're going to get much of a price. I mean, I think it's between Cocktail Moments and Scratch Cat, and I'd give the edge to Cocktail Moments. I really liked her last race. But, you know, I respect Scratch Cat as well. And I do think Scratch Cat will get that down a little bit from that 5-1 on the morning line. And so I got that race pretty chalky, Steve.
Sure. 5-6,
Yeah, and it's sort of the same thing in the looking at race number 8, the Harrods Creek at 7 furlongs. I do want to mention real quick in there, number 2, Double Thunder, since the last time I referenced this, he came back and he ran 4th on August 26th at Charlestown in the Robert Hilton Memorial Stakes. And that made horses from last year's juvenile, Breeders' Cup juvenile, 0-13 in their next start, which was really remarkable that you could have a race like that. And none of the, all the horses came back and raced at 3 or came back in their next start after the Breeders' Cup and lost their next race. But I thought Conniger is the horse to beat in there. I respect Gunnett as well. One horse I'll just say as well that you perhaps could throw on some multi-race tickets is Strava. Because, you know, the way he ran over a one-turn mile at early June, I thought was pretty, was pretty commendable. And he didn't have the best trip in the Ellis Park Derby and could show a little more here. Maybe a minor award is more realistic, but he's worth at least a look in the Harrods Creek, I thought, Steve.
Excellent. All right. Anything else?
And I'm on Scott. I heard Scott before I came on. I like Tarabi as well. I thought that she had a tough trip. You know, she broke slowly in that allowance. And on the ones and twos, while I think she wound up getting hurt, she was so sharp that day on June 18th. And Tarabi really ran a good race to be second then. The third place finisher, you know, came right back and won her next start. I liked how she took a step forward off that race, going a one turn mile one and a half turn mile, and in the Wilton Stakes. And I just think she's moving forward for Tarabi. And both Echo Zulu, Echo Zulu is just too many questions for me, and Drawing the Rail, she just can't afford to get off the slow start.
Fair enough. Anything clever in the Bourbon Trail?
Not really. I like Gilded Age. I mean, I thought that was a really good second in that Curl at Stakes against Artorias 2 back. I thought that, he didn't break well in the Travers and splits the field in 5th. To me, he's the horse to beat with Junior Alvarado. I'll mention a horse in the last race. It's that auction maiden race. Number 8, Peaceful Moment, is 8-1 on the morning line. Shows 3 solid drills in preparation. And for Kenny McPeak, Kenny McPeak can heat up in the fall at Churchill Downs. He's got 4 wins, 2 seconds, and 4 thirds for 21 starts in September. And of those 4 wins, 3 are with 2-year-olds. 2-year-old maiden winners, B Minor and Closed Caption, and Fun and Feisty, who looked terrific winning that Pocahontas Stakes last Saturday. So this dam throws winners of a Peaceful Moment, 9 winners from 11 starters, including 3 juvenile winners, and an 8-1 on the morning line with Brian Hernandez. I like Peaceful Moment in the finale.
That's the 2 at 8-1, Peaceful Moments in that tough nightcap, and a last-second Friday push, LSFP play.
Number 7, Sparkhurst at Churchill Downs today, and race number 6, Turf to Dirt for Thomas Vance. Thomas Vance in 2022 is 7-70. Over the last 18 months, he has 5 wins going turf to dirt. Spakehurst has good speed in a field that doesn't have a lot of speed, and he's versatile enough to sit close or even be on the lead if nobody else wants it. I like him on the front end, 6-1 with Julian Leperu, the 7 in race 6 at Churchill today.
Well, and Leperu, excellent on the lead. Not thought of as a front end guy, but jocks traditionally that come from off the pace are excellent on the front end. Kent DeSormo, a good example. Sean Bridgemahan too. James Scully.
Steve, all the best. James, see you. Have a great time at Parks this
too.
Weekend. Bye bye.
I appreciate it. Not yet, Tom. Give me 2 seconds, Tom Law. That's Scully. Let's take our last break of the morning, and we'll come right back. Tom Law is sitting here. Got to get to Cali Francois. Have not heard back from Nick, so we'll see if Tamaro, because we haven't talked about New York yet. And actually, it's a nice sequence in New York. Even though the stake, the greatest stake, the Athena, is early, there is the Ashley Cole, which goes as the 10th race. Tomorrow in New York. There's 2 allowances. The 8th and the 9th. And They're both very competitive. So I was hoping to get some thoughts in from Nick, but I have not heard back yet. But we got plenty to do. Papo has put up the form to win cutouts for the last four, at least the four leading up to the Pennsylvania Derby. And so I'll get those out to you. And Tom Law here. And who am I missing? Hammer. We got to slip a Hammer visit in as well. Lots to do in this last hour, and it's now less than an hour. Back after this, we're at Parks, and we have raced through 2 hours and 7 minutes. Back after this.